If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 312. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about Cyrillic signs, Orthodox churches, and the Black Sea as we go to Bulgaria. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we go into this week's interview, there is one and only one news story that's dominating a lot of the travel press this week, and that's the sinking of a cruise ship off the coast of Tuscany. And that'll make a lot of news when a cruise ship with over 4,000 people on it strikes a rock in an area that has been navigated for many, many years. They're still searching for survivors, and they're still searching for the truth in this story. The two most bizarre stories that may or may not turn out to be true is one is the captain is claiming he didn't abandon ship, he accidentally fell into a lifeboat. And the other one is that the possible cause of the accident is that he pulled close to the shore so the head waiter could wave at his family. For links to the details on that story, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Craig Zebranski, who's coming to us from stayadventurous.com and come to talk to us about Bulgaria. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, Bulgaria is probably not real high on a lot of people's list. First of all, let's put it on a map so that people can find it.
Sure. It's in Eastern Europe. It's north of Greece and south of Romania, if that helps. And it borders on the Black Sea, which is a big part of reasons why people go to Bulgaria.
And why did you specifically go to Bulgaria?
For me, I wanted to see more of Eastern Europe. Originally, Eastern Europe kind of ended with, well, Czechoslovakia or present-day Czech Republic, where my family was from. And I always thought about going west when I was growing up, and to be honest, even in the Reagan era, you know, it was the Soviet Union, and it was like the Iron Curtain. And I've always was curious about what really was behind it in a way. And I had the opportunity to go deeper into Bulgaria, and I knew I'd see the Black Sea and places that I never thought when I was growing up that I would ever visit. So when I had that opportunity, because a friend of mine who lives in New York and a coworker of mine was from Bulgaria, she was returning home when I had time off. So I decided to travel with her and visit Bulgaria.
And assuming she was okay with this idea?
She's actually invited me. And okay. For years, she would mention all the time about her country. And one of the great things about living in New York is the fact that so many people from all over the world are there. So even if you're not traveling, you could travel through other people's stories and meeting folks. And then enough invitations, I was like, listen, I have time. I'm going to be in Eastern Europe. I'll come. Well, when are you going? So we set it up.
Excellent. And why should other people follow in your footsteps? What should we see in Bulgaria?
Well, I mean, for staying adventurous, Bulgaria is that. I mean, it is an adventure because it's not an English-speaking, Americanized travel destination at all. you're not going to find as much English or as much just American or even English folks who are there as tourists or travelers. The majority of travelers or tourists are actually from Russia when you get to some of the destinations. And it's very interesting where the language is so different on the signs. You can't really read it. And it's just kind of a little bit totally different. So if you want that kind of freshness and rawness of travel, but yet it's still in things that you know, because as it's growing into more of a westernized part of the European Union, part of the Eurozone now, it's a great place to go because it has a little bit of both and it's emerging in a different way.
And we talked about the signs. We're talking about they still use the Cyrillic alphabet.
They do. They do. And my friend who made me actually learn the letters, and I put them in the back of a notebook so I would actually be able to read.
And it's not too bad. I mean, you've got to realize that your P is an R and your pi is a P and things like that. So it's not like going to Chinese or Thai or something like that.
Or Arabic or
anything. Or Arabic or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's manageable. And that makes it fun because it takes a while to get there, but after a while you get it. Like to spell out milk, you're like, whoa, and then that's all it is. Okay. You know, and it's very simple once you know it. But again, I would always have my like decoder ring in the back of my notebook and kind of write it down and check things out.
Excellent. And so I'm assuming you don't speak Russian, Bulgarian, any of the Slavic languages at all. So how was it in terms of getting around if you hadn't had your friend with you?
Right. I landed like a week earlier because I used miles. And so I spent some time on my own as well as time with her.
Okay.
So when I was by myself, I mean, I also could speak Spanish as well, but Spanish is not a useful language there. The majority of people tried to speak to me in French. There's a huge French influence, which was a big of a surprise. Hmm. And in fact, in Bulgarian, when you say thank you, you say merci. So there's a French aspect of the nation, and I flew Air France to get there through Paris, so it makes sense to me. But also, it was a struggle at times. You find English, but not always. And that's also part of the adventure, too, I believe. It's like you will be able to get by. You will be able to eat. You will be able to find a place to stay, go through some of the tourist attractions. But it's different because it's not all catered to you. It's not all in English. It makes it a little bit more challenging, but also that's part of the rawness that sometimes people seek, especially myself, when you travel.
Interesting. And I don't remember any specific French contact with Bulgaria, so I wonder if that goes back to when French was the lingua franca, was the language of diplomacy. I'm just now reading War and Peace, for instance, set in Russia, but the people who are intelligent, who are educated, are the ones who speak French to each other quite often. So I wonder if it's related to that as well.
I thought it might have something to do with Romanian being a Romance language as well, but that definitely wasn't the case because Bulgarian is quite different when spoken than anything that I was familiar with Romance. So I wasn't exactly sure. And, you know, it's an interesting question. I don't know. But the War and Peace angle seems to make a lot of sense.
And what kind of itinerary would you recommend for tackling Bulgaria?
It depends if you're part of a larger trip through the area or if you're going to go Bulgaria specific. I would recommend that one spends definitely at least a week to maybe two. I mean, it depends on how much time you have, and there's so many aspects of it, but you could spend quite a bit of time in there. 2 weeks is a great way to see the country.
Okay.
And you get to hit a little bit of the cities, a little bit of the towns, and spend some time relaxing on the beaches and of that nature.
Okay. And if you had 2 weeks, how would you divide that up if we were just focusing on Bulgaria?
Now, I like cities. So the capital, Sofia, a lot of people would tend to go to different places and leave cities sooner rather than later. You know, I live in New York. I love cities. I love the aspects of the energy that certain neighborhoods bring. And especially when you first get there, it's tough. There's a jet lag aspect. There's also, it's a completely different foreign place. So, I mean, 3 days, probably three nights in the capital is probably great.
Okay. And how would you use your 3 days in Sofia? What would you see?
Walking around certain neighborhoods are great. There's a definite like grotto area where a big open area where you could have lunch and see some performances. There's a church with a gold dome and a museum in the main center area, which you could kind of spend walking around. I would find a couple of neat restaurants. There's also a young college university type area, which just has a certain vibe because when you travel around a bit of the city some, you still see some Soviet-era buildings, some Soviet-era concrete, and then you could kind of see that there's this emergence or a little bit of a change based on, you know, the fact that it's becoming more open and more available, and there's a mind, there's an intelligence that's growing within the city that's kind of an excitement, I think, around it. It's not tremendous in every area, but mm-hmm. you can definitely feel it. And I think cities are kind of like that heartbeat of any nation. So I think a couple of days there and just immerse yourself in understanding. I wouldn't do like a crazy active, I need to see every single thing. I never do that in the city. I just try to go neighborhood, grab a place to eat lunch, find a place to have dinner, ask recommendations at the hostel or hotel that you're staying at, and try to find that and then get acclimated with what Bulgaria and Bulgarians are in a city. And then okay. once you get out to villages more so, you know, you'll find friendlier aspects or nature and things that are totally different.
And I'm going to try to pin you down a little bit here. Okay, I always try to get to the specific. You mentioned there are a couple interesting neighborhoods. Do you recall the name or the location of some of the ones that you enjoyed walking through?
Definitely the two neighborhoods that I mentioned. One is basically the Sofia City Garden. I mean, it's an aspect. It's in English. If you say that, you'll find it. No problem. The other one is the Student Ski Grad. And that's kind of the area where there's a bit of a vibrance. And definitely you could head out for a beer and kind of feel the university vibe of Sofia.
Okay. And then I think you referred to a gold dome church. I think you're talking about the Alexander Nevsky Cathedral, as I look it up on Wikipedia here, which is, I understand, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, too.
It is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Absolutely. And it's just, to me, it felt there's a lot of Byzantine aspects.
Absolutely. As I look at that, I can clearly see an influence by Hagia Sophia.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of interesting influences that I did not know culturally that have gone through Bulgaria that I learned when I was there just from conversations. And you can see it in the architecture. I'm not great at that. Like, oh, my God, that's from here. But kind of when you start having conversations with people, especially my friend who's a guide, she would tell me some interesting facts.
Do you happen to remember any of the interesting facts your guide told you?
No, I didn't know that was a later question or if I was going to save it for later. I apologize. The one thing that stuck with me the longest was the Turkish and the Ottoman Empire, which mm-hmm. controlled a large part of Bulgaria for a long period of time. And the aspect of how there was a huge conversion of religions, you know, which I'm sure happened in Europe during those time periods where it went back and forth between Christianity and Islam. And the aspects in Bulgaria was with the Byzantines, there was a bit of yes and no. So they were asked with a knife under them whether or not they would convert to Islam. So they would have to shake their head yes or no. So basically, even though they were shaking their head yes, in Bulgaria, what they did is they inverted that. So the yes and no were actually reversed because they didn't mean that at the time.
So the head shake goes the other direction in...
Right. So if you're shaking your head yes, if someone asks you something, you're really saying no. And it stems back to whether or not you would convert to Islam from the Turkish rule.
Interesting.
So it was really interesting because a lot of times you think when you don't speak the language and know it, a simple head yes or no is sufficient. Like, no, don't sell me that. I don't want that. Or yes, I need another beer. Or but it's actually the opposite. You know, I mean, that was a tough thing of getting used to, which is in their culture, which I found very, very unique that it stems back hundreds and hundreds of years to a particular time.
Interesting.
Things like that, little stories that you hear that you're like, whoa, that's very interesting.
Yeah, the Turkish, I'm going to say influence or invasion, basically, of that area led all the way up to the gates of Vienna in what is now Austria. So, in fact, the croissant was invented in a crescent shape to celebrate victory over the Turks.
Interesting. I did not know that.
In Vienna, not in France, actually, strangely enough. But anyway, back to Bulgaria. Okay. Anything else we should talk about Sofia before we go on?
No, that's it. I don't think the city has so many things to see, but it's just interesting to really capture the heartbeat of the country through its capital.
Excellent. And then you'd go where from there?
I would head south first. There's a couple of spots south, directly down. First, there's the mountains. There's the Pirin. And as well as the Rila Mountains, which have a couple of aspects for hiking trails. There's also monasteries there and the wine region or the wine particular town, which I enjoyed, called Melnik. And they're all straight south from Sofia.
Okay. And you mentioned the monasteries. I think we're talking an area fairly close to Greece. There, some of the monasteries are really remote and very protected. Are we talking that sort of thing here?
Yes. It's the same kind of aspects which I believe happened in Greece, but basically over communist rule and other rules, they didn't bother with the monasteries because they were so remote up in the mountains where really nobody was except monks that never really came down and things of that nature. So during a lot of these invasions, they were untouched for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Interesting.
during a lot of the change. So I've even met folks, and the specifics of which monasteries, but I know they were on like 11 or 12 day monastery hike through the mountains.
Oh,
interesting. They'd go from monastery to monastery, and there was quite a few people that would do that in Bulgaria.
And taking advantage of the hospitality then also, being able to stay in the monasteries.
Right. I mean, whether or not they stay within particular monasteries or stay within towns that are right by it, okay. Aspects. I mean, they would mostly have that all figured out. That was not something I was doing, but I did visit some of the monasteries.
Okay. And I'm thinking we would see some old then, for instance, iconography that's representative of the Orthodox Church, which would be common in Bulgaria. So the pictures of the saints in gold leaf and things like that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I can remember some images as soon as you say that in certain rooms and certain areas of where I was in the monasteries. I visited two. I visited the one in Rila, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site as well. It's a very famous one, probably one of the most famous ones. And then there's another one I actually hiked to because it was a short hike, doable. When I had some time on my own, I went down to Melnik, which was the wine area, and then I hiked to one of the monasteries and came back to the town and spent the night there. So it was an interesting hike for me, as well as to see two different monasteries at the time.
And you say the wine area, and of course this always surprises me how many different countries have a wine area that I don't think of as wine producing areas. Is there a common wine that is popular in Bulgaria?
I think if you consider wine in a 2-liter plastic bottle, common.
All right.
That's it. I don't remember any names or bottles of glass when I was in this region. Everything was being sold in 2-liter plastic outside, big jugs of it, and it just seemed to be voluminous and inexpensive and quite good. I mean, I remember someone telling me that you'll never get a hangover from Bulgarian wine. And people have tested it, and I don't recall ever being hungover either. But I'm not sure I drank as much as, you know, to hangover status, but that was the wine area. And there's this cute little town, Melnik, which dates back to earlier times with like certain whitewashed houses and cute little bed and breakfast type small hotels with little restaurants and cafes right around where you could hike. And it's a great spot to spend a night or two and just kind of have a dinner and just kind of relax in a different kind of country style atmosphere that's not uniquely Bulgarian, but when you're in Bulgaria, it's quite interesting because I didn't really consider them a wine producer either until I was there. Greece, of course, which is just a few kilometers south of this region, is. So it makes sense when you think about geography.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Where to next?
I want to talk about one other place that, well, maybe it's a place that I think most people don't go, but my friend took me there. Is still in the south region in the Piran Mountains or the Rila Mountains. It's a town known as Bansko, B-A-N-S-K-O. And it's a region for ski resorts. And it's where my friend actually learned to ski and would go there on her winter holidays. So she wanted to go back, even though we went in the summertime. We did a hike in some of these mountain areas. But the town for me was particularly special because it brought back a lot of emotions for my guide, but also it was a lot of folklore music. Even in the summertime, there was quite a bit of activity. Every bar or cafe had like a live folk band or band music, and the songs were very emotional, spirited. You could really feel it in when you're sitting there having, like, let's say, grilled meats or some vegetables and stuff, and there was this powerful music that really was an emotional spot. And I think if I was in that region for a couple of days, I would definitely recommend that spot. I might not have found it if I was looking in the guidebook or skipped it, especially because I was there in the summer, as opposed to it's a wintertime ski resort.
Right.
It was popular. It was not too crowded at all. But it was one of my favorite little spots. That, and it was our first stop along on this road trip with my friends. And I'm glad. I'm really glad that we stopped there.
Excellent. And then I suspect at this point you're getting ready to head to the resorts of the Black Sea.
Yes. When you head out, there's definitely a town. This is a town, if I went back to Bulgaria, I would definitely visit. At the time, my friend was on a tight itinerary, and we pushed out to the Black Sea faster. But when we're heading out, a lot of people stop at this place called Veliko Tamovo, which is kind of, and I've seen some night images of it, as well as images of the actual city and town. And it just seems like a place where a lot of people spend some time, or there's rumors of people, of course, stopping there for a couple of nights and then spending a lifetime. But it just kind of has that quaint feel of a particular spot. It used to be the capital of Bulgaria back in the past. So it has a lot of some older buildings and older architectural charm that I'm unfamiliar with. It's definitely on my to-do list for my next visit.
Okay.
And then further out, that's when we drove out to the Black Sea. And then we stopped at a bunch of different spots along the beaches of the Black Sea.
Now, the Black Sea resorts before the fall of the Berlin Wall were really, really popular for people behind the Iron Curtain. My impression is that they're not as highly touristed now as they used to be. Am I wrong about that? Or?
I mean, it's hard for me to tell because I haven't been there, and I'm not sure of the statistics, but there were places that were packed
okay. When
I was there. And I would imagine as more and more money happens in Russia, because the majority of tourists are Russian,
okay. They're
starting to venture out and to go other places. But I'm assuming that probably a middle class or a growing class is coming down, because this is probably more of the affordable trip from, let's say, Moscow and things of that nature for the beach resorts as opposed to heading further.
Well, and also if it's unfamiliar to us because the signs are all in Cyrillic, then the flip side is it's more familiar to a Russian middle class because the signs are all in Cyrillic.
Absolutely. And it's their same spelling. So it's really helpful to be able to read that language.
And where did you go on the Black Sea?
The first spot we went to was called Sozopol. We arrived late, and that's where we spent some time camping on the beach.
Okay.
And that was just completely unwinding. I remember water sports are there, windsurfing is available. When I first arrived to the Black Sea, it was a big deal for me to touch it even. And I remember I even made a joke because it was at night, so the sea was black still. So I definitely joked, and my friend has not let me live that down. She's like, you thought the sea was black? I mean, no, but it was very interesting. And to be honest, it's one of the bluest waters that I've ever been a part of.
Oh, really?
It's really gorgeous. Yes, yes. Some of the areas later on when we went out for a day sail from a boat, and the next town we went to called Nessebar, and rented a sailboat for a day and just kind of went out on the sea. It was amazing. I was impressed. It's as clear a place is and as blue as like you would expect the Mediterranean when you're on the Greek islands and stuff. It was definitely one of the surprises for me. So I was impressed. But the Black Sea was clearly not black at all. And then after Nessebar, which also has a neat little town across the way that I remember, like an older town. A lot of these places were along seaports for hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of years, and restructured over time. There's an old town area here which had some great cobblestone streets and some nice restaurants and just kind of a great atmospheric vibe that was a lot of fun to spend a night or two. And then the last place we went was the big city actually on the sea, which is called Varna. This is where some of her family was. But this place was, if you went to some of the areas where there were parties, you could really find a huge atmosphere of summertime. It felt like in some places, I grew up in New York, and people go to the shores on the weekends. There was just a huge packed atmosphere.
So it felt like Jones Beach.
Not even Jones Beach, because I don't think people have houses and second homes and things of that nature or rent spots. It seems like there's a lot of hotels where they're probably more like, I don't want to say Jersey Shore, but I guess I just did. But it has, or Fire Island for that matter.
Okay,
or
got it.
Things where people go and then there's like the weekends are huge parties. And then all of a sudden on a Tuesday, it's happening, but not like it is Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Got it. Okay. And that's, I assume, where you said you were seeing the packed beaches.
That's where I saw the packed, just actually less than the beaches, but more the nighttime.
The nightlife.
There's a couple of strips of bars and just people everywhere and just a lot of, I guess I would call it fiesta or partying aspects. Russia gone wild even, you know, Russians gone wild. It had an energy of that kind of nature, which from my first stop along the Black Sea, it was camping on the beach. It was kind of tranquil. We were in a tent. The next spot was a neat little town. And sure, it had an atmosphere, but this was like to the next level. It was definitely that party atmosphere was available in this town.
Now, what time of year were you traveling?
July.
Okay. And how pleasant was the weather in July? I mean, you were talking very warm because you're relatively far south for Europe.
Yes, it was warm. But from Sofia, it was probably some of the warmest area. But once I got south, you know, you're up more in the mountains, so it was cool at night, for sure, when you're in those regions. And I remember even when one night we hiked part of the way and then hiked around the Pyrenees Mountains, it was very cold, you know, at night, because it wasn't like heat. I mean, we were in this wooden shack partway up into the mountains for one evening, and that was chilly, I remember. But the Black Sea, during the day, it's warm. It was, I would remember in the 80s and out on the boat, I mean, shorts and a t-shirt. But at night, you know, you might sometimes with the winds and stuff off the water, it'd be a long sleeve t-shirt, things of that nature.
Now, you mentioned being surprised by the clarity of the water and the blueness of the Black Sea. Any other surprises for you for Bulgaria in general?
Yes. I remember reading Bill Bryson's book, actually, and he talked about Sophia in the book Neither Here Nor There, which I think is his recount of he traveled in Europe in the 70s and then went back in the 90s and wrote that book. And I remember him saying, Sophia, he's like, man, I'm the most beautiful girls in all of Europe. I was surprised. There's a lot of attractive people that were in Bulgaria.
So not all babushkas, this sort of mental image that you get when Bulgaria. Okay.
There was definitely a lot of fashion in the capital city as well.
Interesting.
And definitely on the beaches. I mean, sure, a lot of them came down, but I was just like, wow, this is not just generally what I expected. That was definitely one of the surprises. Another was definitely a lot of people knew French was a surprise for me, which I mentioned. There's the culture and the folklore and music. There are so many different ethnic areas from town to town that each had their different little aspect that they would change in their hat or their tribe or stuff. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it, but it was a bit of a surprise for me too, as well as the Turkish history was another surprise. You know, just the yes is no and how much it's still there and how much Bulgaria and Turkey. You know, I always thought it was Turkey and Greece that were always at odds more so. But
it
Bulgaria,
was both, yeah.
Bulgaria plays a role. I never really considered it as much. So it was a bit of a surprise.
Any warning you would give before you go to Bulgaria, make sure you know what?
I would know that it's not going to be easy with English completely.
Okay.
And the fact that they're not used to American tourists and American stuff. And you have to realize where you are in the world and where they're becoming. I mean, I would give that warning in probably a few places. You know,
sure.
Around, so I don't think it's specific to Bulgaria. But just in general, I mean, you're in Bulgaria. They're not used to taking care of tourists in a certain manner. Okay. It's kind of more, I don't want to call it a rugged trip, but you have to remember to stay adventurous in a way, or just be having that adventurous mindset that you're in Bulgaria, this is different, and appreciate it as opposed to complain about it.
And I think you're talking about, for instance, when the Iron Curtain fell, at least for a while, several places really didn't have a service mentality. Is that the sort of thing you're thinking of?
That's definitely a huge aspect of it.
Okay.
There's not a tremendous service industry or just service to people, service in general.
Okay.
Especially for the tourist. Yeah.
Right, right.
I think when you find it once or twice, I mean, I was very fortunate to be with a local who could speak at times, so we were able to get a different level of service.
Sure.
Because she's from there. I mean, if I was on my own, which I was for a bit of it, definitely clear difference. But at times, that's what makes it part of the interesting aspect of travel.
Right. So I know you lost some of your pictures of Bulgaria, and it's tragic always for me to hear someone talk about that. But are there any particular pictures that you took there that really just captured the essence of the country for you, for your experience? You look at that picture, and you're right back in Bulgaria.
For me, I posted one, a sunset in Melnik for me. There's one I have me walking on a trail. You know, and I took someone else heading towards one of the monasteries that I still have, actually, that would bring me straight back. Like, when I see it, I'm like, Bulgaria. And then there's another one of me, which is actually of me, actually. Someone took it for me right against the Black Sea, you know, in the background, which I know it's the Black Sea. And I'm always like, man, I made it to the Black Sea. So those places take me back to Bulgaria, those images.
Okay. We talked about that Bulgaria, for a European country, I think, too, is a little more foreign in places. When did you feel closest to home, and when did you feel furthest from home? Most familiar, least familiar culturally?
I think I felt furthest from home getting into the country, just with the whole passport aspects.
Uh-huh.
No visa was needed or anything, but just, you know, I landed by myself in a country where I couldn't necessarily read a lot of the signs, and the airport wasn't so large. Everyone else on the plane seemed to be from Bulgaria. You know, like, sometimes you land and, like, everyone's a tourist and they're going out, or everyone's a traveler and you're coming from a distant land. But it seemed like everyone was coming from Paris was kind of Bulgarian or had family there. So when I got off the plane, like, not knowing which way to go and stuff, I remember getting through customs and getting through immigration, and I was just like, I'm in Bulgaria. You know, like, that was probably
okay.
The furthest I felt from being home.
And then what was the most familiar?
Probably when I was hiking with my friend.
Okay.
Because the mountain and the terrain, you know, it could be something I'm looking out the window in Pennsylvania. And
okay.
I remember just hiking a little bit and just seeing it. And I'm like, this is a great spot, but it's not.
But it could have been the Poconos.
Unless you told me that I was in Bulgaria, like, I could have been anywhere. And I felt like my parents have a place out in Pennsylvania. And it just kind of reminded me of the same type of trees and a little bit of ruggedness. And I was like, you know, I've been here before.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Bulgaria?
I remember eating a pizza on the water, and this bunch of younger, probably Russian girls sit down, and they get this pizza too, and they just took out this huge thing of ketchup and just sprayed it all over the pizza. And like, I was just like,
and I like ketchup, but
it was just bizarre to me. And I was just like, yeah, okay. Like, this is, I'm definitely not in Kansas anymore. I mean, this is Bulgaria. And my friend said, yeah, they do that a lot here. Like, I was just surprised. But I'll never forget that image. I even took a photo of it without her trying to see it and everything, because I was like, I just got to get that pizza, you know, like with ketchup on it. But I always remember that. And I've never seen it since. I've never seen anyone do it anywhere in the world.
It's just as well.
I think so too.
Any good money-saving tips for Bulgaria? I'm picturing Bulgaria is not too expensive these days.
It wasn't too expensive comparatively, especially to Western Europe. And that's part of the attraction to it for sure. You definitely spend more days. Saving money tips? For me, I would go in with the food too. Food is definitely cheaper there.
Bring your own ketchup.
Bring your own ketchup. I mean, no, because it's plentiful, apparently. It's everywhere. And this is probably true to a lot of areas, but there was something about Bulgaria. This might sound odd too, and maybe it stems to the ketchup that I miss, but tomatoes. I remember being there and tomatoes were in season, and everywhere I could get, I would order tomatoes. They tasted like tomatoes should taste. They were so good. The cucumbers, the fresh vegetables and fruits that you'd find in stands were great. And whether or not you get some bread and cheese and stuff like that, I think you could throw that in your backpack. And a lot of places, that's going to be the best tasting, because especially coming from the States, a lot of times I go and I buy tomatoes in the store and it looks like a tomato, but...
But it ships really well, yeah.
Right. I just remember that. And I don't want to say that that's necessarily money saving, but it is an aspect. And it's definitely something that I would remember about Bulgaria and Greece too, and other places along the Mediterranean, that just the fruits and vegetables, I think, were grown real. And that was so tasty.
Now, your brand is Stay Adventurous. So if I want to stay adventurous, what things should I do in Bulgaria?
I think the first thing is going.
Okay.
The brand Stay Adventurous is a mindset for travel, a mindset for life is what my tagline is supposed to be. And I think Bulgaria provides that adventure which people could take with you, because you learn in a lot of ways. Like for me, I learned about life on the other side of in Eastern Europe, or deep beyond where I ever thought I might be able to get to see when I was a young kid. And it just was an interesting aspect that there are so many similarities and yet some differences in some aspects, that it's a different place with a different language and a different world, but yet they do the same. And there's a huge middle class emerging that's working very hard and gets only their couple weeks off a year. And I got to talk to some of these folks and I'm just like, they're doing a lot of the same things we're doing, but it's just they have a different history. They grew up in a different era where certain things were under communist rule and what that meant to them compared to how I grew up in the United States and how fortunate in a lot of ways I've been. So I think when you go over there, just seeing that and learning that and being reminded of that is definitely part of the adventure of Bulgaria. And the other thing is the beauty in the place. I mean, I think it is undiscovered in a lot of ways. The Black Sea towns, I think, are beautiful and great to see. The Black Sea was a total gem and a surprise for me. You know, I think that's some of the adventure of getting out there and being out on the water there. To me, a lot of times it's just exactly where I am in the world that I think brings a smile to my face when I think about it, or I look on an actual map or a globe. I'm like, yeah, this is where I am. And I think Bulgaria was one of those places that you don't go there because not a lot of people go there, but it's a unique place. And I had the opportunity with someone who is from there to show it to me. And if you have that opportunity in Bulgaria or elsewhere, anywhere, it's definitely something that I would recommend.
Okay. I've got two more questions for you, but before I ask those, do you have anything else that they should know before they go to Bulgaria?
There's one other interesting aspect of Bulgaria that was unique to me, was that yogurt. Now, yogurt is derived from a Turkish word, but the bacteria itself apparently has Bulgarian in its roots, and it was invented in Bulgaria.
Okay. So
they take a lot of pride in the yogurt there, and they drink yogurt drinks. I was not a tremendous fan. They were everywhere, and people would have them for refreshments. You know, they'd go in and pull out a little yogurt drink.
I've had them in Turkey, I think, was the first time I had them. Yeah, not my favorite, but...
Yeah, like over a glass of, like, fresh water, someone would prefer the yogurt drink. I'm just like, really? Not for me. But it was unique, and they've taken a lot of pride in the fact that the yogurt is from there.
Interesting.
I thought that was interesting. It's something worthy of mention. If you're a yogurt fan, you'll find it everywhere.
Excellent. Last two questions.
Sure.
Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Bulgaria when what?
Like, I really knew I was in Bulgaria when I was reading the Cyrillic language and Cyrillic language and trying to find my way to hike to a monastery. I was like, I'm only doing this in Bulgaria.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Bulgaria in just three words, what three words would you use?
I would say mountains, monasteries, Black Sea. I know that's four.
Okay. We'll give you the compound word at the end there. Great. Craig, if people wanted to read more about your travels, we plugged it a few times, but where should they go?
They should go to stayadventurous.com.
Excellent.
That's where they could find me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us about your newfound love for Bulgaria.
It's a great undiscovered country. Hopefully I gave it some justice, and I really appreciate being on the show. Thanks, Chris.
In news of the community, I heard from Spencer about the episode about Bangladesh. One of your best episodes, informative, entertaining, and enticing. You had me packing my bags until the Calcutta comment at the end. And then Alan from Alan's Wildlife Tours that was mentioned in the episode on Northern Queensland wrote and said the Lake Ecom and Barreen in Queensland where Dave went are volcanic. And he also commented, there's no way that anyone would call Daintree Village a, quote, city, except for our mutual friend Dave. And then I also heard from Vlad about the episode about Russia, who said, I listened to the podcast, which is about travel to Russia. I'm from St. Petersburg, and it was so much fun to listen to. I enjoyed it. As I've heard, there was some kind of need for Russian speakers, so I want to tell you that it would be a big pleasure, interesting experience, and much fun to help you while you're making travel report. So to be informed, you're welcome in St. Petersburg. Just let me know if you're going to travel here. Thanks so much, Vlad, for the wonderful offer. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any comments, feel free to leave them on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cathedral.